evening, everyone. This is James and Danette. Welcome to HBCU iRadio Family Circle. And again, this is James.
And Danette. Can I say my own name?
You can say your own name. You got to chime in. You're going to chime in. Hey, well, we're excited this evening to have you join us for Family Circle, where we talk about family security and we talk about life issues. You know, one of the things that we want to do in our platform is create awareness, both financially and some of the life issues. So our co-hosts on our show is Tasha and Kenyatta out of South Carolina. We have Chef Ron and Precious out of North Carolina, Craig out of North Carolina, and Tamara and Jazz, JT Ladies Lounge. And I believe it's Maryland, D.C., or anything up top. We're going to let them claim it all. All right? So, without further ado, this evening we're truly, truly blessed to have as our hosts Tasha and Kenyatta out of South Carolina. So, Tasha and Kenyatta, are you there?
Hey, guys, we are here. How's everyone doing?
Great.
Hey,
we're
good.
Doing
great. Hello, good.
Amazing. Awesome. Well, this is Tasha Jordan, co-host of Family Circle, heard each Monday at 6:30 p.m. right here on HBCU iRadio. And I am the CEO and founder of Ella Rose Group, where we educate, insure, and protect our family's financial future. And I have my sister, my friend, Kenyatta, as a co-host with me tonight.
Hey, everybody. Like you said, my name is Kenyatta. I am the founder, co-founder, of course, I should say, because my sister's a part of it as well, M2M Financial Group, similar to what Tasha said, my big sister. I protect families, making sure they are insured and investing in their future as well. So kind of getting started on our topic for tonight to kind of get us in that momentum was, the challenge of the mental health stigma in the Black community. I will say that me personally, I've definitely had my own struggles with just mental health in general. Of course, as we talk throughout the show tonight, I'll probably go a little bit more in depth of those things, but I'm not going to start that now because it's not about me, because we have some amazing co-hosts on the show with us tonight. So my first question to kind of get us started about the whole stigmatism in the Black community is, why is mental health in the Black community so stigmatized? If anybody wants to start, I'm opening it up to everybody out there.
Well, this is Precious. I'm a part of Perspective with the Paulins and I choose me hashtag No More Excuses mission and movement, which celebrates each of us to understand that we have a special piece. We have a masterpiece that we all should bring. But I think the reason that is a stigma in the Black community is the way we relate to the mental health. We automatically, I think, believe that it means that you're crazy or means that, you know, you can't cope. But what it really means is that we're stuck. Because what mental health is where your mindset is. And when your mindset is stuck, you develop mental issues because you haven't let go of the things that you can't change. You know how they say insanity is doing the same thing, expecting different results? Well, that's what mental health is being stuck in the past and not understanding that until you get through it and go through it, you won't be able to deal with whatever it was teaching you. And so that's my perspective as far as mental health in the Black community. I just think we got the wrong idea of what it means.
Right, I agree 100% with that. Sorry, I don't want to cut anybody off. Go ahead. Go ahead and continue.
No, Kenyatta, go ahead. It was just Tasha. Go ahead with the next one.
No, you're fine, Tasha. I was just gonna say I agree with her 100%. I'm looking for the rest of the co-host to kind of speak up, and then I'll kind of get my 2 cents on the back end. But I was just agreeing with what she was saying.
All right. Well, this is James, the J Square Financial Services. One of the things that I look at the stigma test. I grew up, you know, I was born in the 60s, and as I grew up, we always were taught to be men. Men don't cry, men stand up, men fight through, and all those things are true, you know, from a foundational standpoint. But we also have to know that men are vulnerable, you know, and oftentimes we put so much pressure on us that we are scared to go to speak to anybody because of how it, the perception of our community, the perception of our other brothers as far as looking weak. Because I don't know if you ever grew up playing the dozens, and playing the dozens mean we just clowning each other. You never wanted to open yourself up for ridicule in anything because you will get clowned. And so that's one of the reasons I see why we avoid those circumstances.
Hey, James, this is Tasha. I totally agree with that because we're so worried in our community about how someone else sees us, our image, and when we're sick inside, but we want to have this front and act like we're fine, but inside we're crying, we're tearing ourselves apart inside. So I totally agree with your comment. Someone else about to say something?
Hello, Tasha?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Craig Thompson with owner of Big Time Coaching and Speaking. I just kind of follow up with what James was saying. I think in the black community, men in general with any kind of sickness or any kind of problems they're having are scared. You know, black men are the last to go to the doctor to get checked out. And my experience with this is with not only in my black community, but also being a former professional athlete and making a transition, and guys that are coming out of professional athletics, and they were always thought of as, you know, these barbarians, these tough guys, and they're going through different mental issues with the transition from sports to everyday life and things in their family and being the breadwinner and all these things, that they're afraid to reach out even to their own teammates, old teammates or brothers, to seek assistance. You know, with the NFL and different Major League Baseball and basketball, they got different programs for men that are coming out and transitioning to cope with different challenges that they have. But men in general are hesitant to actually go and seek that help because they feel vulnerable and they want to let themselves open because they've been always told that they're just super athlete, or this guy that's tough and this guy that handles responsibility and things just come off his shoulders. But it's a real challenge for us. And here with the Charlotte chapter of the NFLPA, I do a lot of talking with guys, and now they're, you know, letting them know it's okay to ask for help or to seek assistance in different areas in their life.
Hello, this is Mara from JT Ladies Lounge. I have a comment. I think that the reason why in the black community that it's not spoken about a lot is, number one, like the other co-host has said, that, you know, embarrassment and shame and looked at as being judged. But when some people do come out, not everybody, but sometimes when they do come out that they need help or have mental issues, they looked at sometimes, oh, they just want attention. So sometimes I believe that people don't come out neither because they don't want to be looked at, oh, we just need attention. You know, they just want to seek attention. And sometimes people, you know, don't, you know, share their illness or what they're going through because they don't want to be looked at that way. So I think that's one reason why, you know, it's kind of pushed under the rug.
I agree with you. This is Kenyatta here. I agree 100% with that. They just don't want to be looked at in a certain way. And then I think with a lot of us, sometimes we perceive it as, oh, if you have mental illness, then you're crazy. And not understanding that mental illness goes with depression, it goes with anxiety. And those are different things that a lot of people just are misinformed and think, oh, if it's mental illness, that I got to be, you know, put somewhere, I got to be taking all these different medications because I'm not right. But that's not always the case. And I think that's where, you know, our community is just misinformed of what mental illness really is.
Right. And two, also, Kenyatta, I also believe that when it does come out, or when someone, you know, you ask a question, well, what's bothering you? What makes you have depression? What makes you have anxiety? And, you know, don't let somebody say for something that happened 20 years ago, it's like, what? You should be over that by now. You know, you still suffering with that? And then it's like, well, this is why I didn't want to say nothing. I was holding it in because now that I come out and say, this is why I'm this way, this is why, you know, I'm depressed. This is why I have anxiety. This is why I have, you know, feel that I'm going crazy because I have all this boiled up that's happened from my childhood or my teen years, and now I'm here 40, 50 years old, and you looking at me like, well, you should be past that.
Right, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you, we hold that stuff in, and like you said, years and years go by, and we're just supposed to erase it from our memories. But it just manifests into something until it gets worse and worse and worse. And now you just feel, like you say, crazy. And
right.
Another question I wanted to kind of lead into. What factors do you guys think affects our mental health? Like Kiana said, it could be, she was talking about depression, but what other factors do you guys think affects our mental health in our Black community?
I just wanted to say, this is precious. I wanted to say, I find that a lot of times we just suffer in silence. And I think that is like the core or the root of why we go through a lot of stuff that we go through, because we're not, you know, we're scared to share our stories or share our testimonies in order to get the insight or even the help we need in order to get to the next level.
I agree, Precious. This is Kenyatta. I agree. I think a lot of times we don't want to speak up and say, of course, everybody kind of knows it's me. I lost my husband through something tragic last year. So it put me on a really weird roller coaster. So, of course, I'm still going through that roller coaster, but I always tell, and then I have some really close friends of mine who also have lost their husbands and their fiancés, and so we're kind of really tight bond now because of those things. But I'm the only one that's actually talking to somebody. So I'm like, you know, why are y'all not talking to somebody? And I get that, you know, we're all, you know, holding each other accountable, and we're all friends, and we can kind of come to each other when we have those moments. But I find myself having my most deepest moments and darkest moments with my therapist, because it's someone that's not there, that doesn't know me, and that can't judge me because they don't know anything about me, you know, from whatever I tell them. So I could either be vulnerable and tell them everything, or I can kind of create this own persona for them. And I think that's kind of one of those things that kind of plays a part, is people just don't know where to go and who to talk to. And I think they think that if they talk with someone within their circle, then it's going to have them looked at differently. And then they get nervous that somebody on the outside is going to judge them. But like Tasha and I had a conversation earlier, that's what they got paid for. They went to school for it. Let them do their job and be there to assist you and help you and get you through those tough days that you have.
Hey,
go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, this is Jasmine. I was just going to say, I think some of the factors that contribute to our mental health issues stem from childhood. And I also think even for our parents and our parents' parents, I think a lot of it stems from their childhood because, you know, whatever they're dealing with, they raise us according to, you know, what they dealt with or what they saw. So that's where, you know, a lot of learning right from wrong comes from. But if they were raised in an environment that was traumatic or that, you know, had a lot going on in it, then, you know, when we're raised in that environment similar, then I think it just creates a whole cycle of people with mental things that they have never dealt with. And when you are the one that wants to speak out or speak up about how you feel and how it's affecting you, it's not perceived well because they don't understand, because they had to suck it up, you know what I'm saying, back in their day, or they had to just keep moving, or they weren't able to express how they felt. So that's basically what they tell you to do. Like, oh, it ain't that bad, or, you know, it could be worse. When I was growing up, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And you're like, well, yeah, that was wrong too. And that's probably part of the problem, that you never addressed that situation. So now we here, and it's affecting me in a whole, and not in a whole different way, but like it affected you, but I'm trying to seek help. I don't want to repeat the cycle. So I think, you know, that's a major factor that contributes to our mental situations.
I was going to chime in from a standpoint when Kenyatta was speaking, when she said therapist, it kind of makes everybody cringe a little bit, therapist, because there's stigma attached to the word therapist, psychiatrist. Those are stigmas attached to it that people may perceive. And unfortunately, we can say we don't think about things like that, but we all have perceptions and we all jump to conclusions before we get all the facts, especially in today's society. Once somebody says it and it goes viral, we take it as law.
And I just want to say, this is Jeanette, everyone, with J Squared Financial Services. And just to make a statement, and just regarding healthcare, I think as a community, we just got consistent with having a primary care physician. So now that we've overcome that and we're consistent in taking care of our health, now our mental health, that's a whole nother ball game. And it's complicated. It's a really complicated issue, I feel. If we're not, okay, so one, we're, you know, because there's so many different categories and so many different types, but if we're not talking about the chemically imbalanced, but you definitely need medication for that. You definitely need to be seen and have medication for that. However, the, you know, as far as experiences that we've had in the past, that, yeah, we may speak to our therapist about. Now, that's, you know, of course, a different issue. But, of course, in order to know where you are mentally with your health, you got to see somebody. That's the start. So, for me, it's like I feel so happy and just I'm very much encouraged about us grasping out, you know, understanding what our health is, you know, it looks like now. And we're moving forward health-wise. But now mentally, our mental health now, that's a whole nother ballgame. So, and I pray that we do are able to, you know, see someone and talk to someone and make that step towards our mental health. Because truly, it's a, you know, it's a health issue. It is not just mental health, but it's a health issue. So, and that's my 2 minutes.
That was awesome. 2 minutes, Jeanette.
This is Tamara. Again, I have a comment too. Just two comments. Going back to the stigma of why is mental health issues like pushed under the rug. Another thing I was thinking too, because when we come out and say we have an issue, we have that fear sometimes of losing people. Losing people, you possibly could lose your kids, you possibly could lose your job. You know, so it's also like if I say something, you know, what about they come take my kids? What about my job fail now and I'm not capable of, you know, working or, you know, living this lifestyle that I've been living? So now I have this fear that I'm going to lose all this stuff if I say I have these issues. And going back to the factor, Jasmine and I did a show a couple of weeks with mental health, and one of the reasons why we, you know, get into that stage is also poverty, you know, not having enough finances and, you know, not living up to a standard that maybe we feel that we should live, or thinking that we, or that if we're trying to live up to somebody else's standard, you know, not having that enough finances and you feeling like, okay, I'm poor, you know, I'm broke. Because, I mean, some people, honestly, when some people don't have money, they get into this depressed mode, and you're like, what's wrong with you? Like, what are you angry for? Just be happy that you done paid your bills, you got a roof over your head, you got food in your house, but now you upset and mad because you don't have money to, what, hang out the weekend? You know, like, I honestly have seen people and know people that get in that funk because they don't probably have the money that they want to have. So that's another factor that I feel that can cause people to go into mental illness issues is poverty. Or, you know, again, just not living up to the standards that they feel that they should be financial.
Hi, well, I'm Jasmine, too. Just to piggyback off from JT Ladies Lounge, just to piggyback off what T was saying, I completely understand that because I know that, you know, dealing with some things, I have personally said, well, I would go seek help, but my clearance might be in jeopardy. And I can't lose my job because if I lose my job, then, you know, it's going to create a whole plethora of other problems. So I'm going to swallow this. I'm going to deal with it the best way I can, and I'm going to cry on those around me. But those around me need just as much help as I did. So it was kind of like the blind trying to lead the blind, and it was, you know what I'm saying? So it could potentially have led to worse traumatic experiences. It didn't. You know, eventually it worked itself out, but I have to, you know, agree with what you're saying, T, about, you know, not wanting to seek help because of, you know, fear of losing your job or, you know, people you care about or things like that.
Hey, T, I totally agree with you, and I wanted to piggyback off of, you said something about poverty. I do feel like that's one of the factors, just not having enough, not knowing how you're going to provide for your family. And that can mentally do something to you, especially when you don't know if your kids are going to be able to eat tonight or if you know you're going to have a home for them to stay in. So I do believe poverty is a major factor. I also wanted to ask you guys, what do you guys think about racism? Do you guys think racism play a part in the Black community as far as the mental health?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was just thinking about that today. Just the stress of work, dealing with work. This is Sean, by the way. The stress of work, and it's not like the direct overt racism. It's that implicit racism where they just think that because you're Black that you can't reach a certain level or you might not be able to handle a certain task or a project, so they just automatically skip over you. Or they think you need help when you don't. And, you know, that goes to what the last speaker was saying about just providing for your family. So you put that on top of that, and you see, like, I know why a lot of brothers suffer because, and then we don't ask for help. We try to do everything on our own. We don't talk to each other about what's going on in our lives. So it's like a snowball effect. And, you know, I think for me, the best thing I did was join the men's group where, you know, we all come together and talk about these things because I have learned in the last month that talking makes things easier. And someone mentioned health insurance. I think Jeanette was talking about, you know, we all have, most of us have primary care physicians now. I would just ask everyone to check your insurance. Check your insurance. I'm pretty sure that your insurance policy will have some kind of mental health coverage. You just have to check. And because I know, like, most of the another stigma is that going to talk to a psychiatrist is expensive, and that's not always the case. I think years ago I was dating someone else, and we was having some issues, and we went to see a therapist, and it was only $50. So I think that cost plays a part of it too. But just check, ask everyone to check their insurance, see what it covers, find out. And you don't even have to have an issue to go see, talk to your a therapist, right? I think that's what Jeanette was saying too. Just take a barometer where you are, you know, find out.
And you're right, Sean. A lot of times too, this is James. We think in the Black community, I heard it a lot, that our pastor, our church, our ministry is our therapist, and so a lot of times that's where people think, hey, well, it's either the church or the barbershop, that's where your psychologist is. And I think that hurts us as well. So, great point.
And also, too, speaking about, you know, a church, you know, sometimes we feel like, you know, we're not praying hard enough because, you know, we feel like, you know, when there's issues spiritually, or we think they're spiritually, that we would go, you know, what we're always told is to pray. You know, you're not praying hard enough, you know. So that's also, too, one of the things, too, and I think in our community is that not that we shouldn't pray. Of course, that's the first and foremost thing that you should do is pray. I believe in prayer. However, God blessed us with doctors, not only with health doctors, but mental doctors as well. And I think we have to also take that into account.
I agree with that. We actually had that was a question that we'll pick back up after the sponsor right here in a second. But that was one of those questions that I was going to actually pose to talk about. This is Kenyatta, sorry, by the way. Is why does the Black community feel like, you know, church is a replacement for therapy or to talk with someone? So we'll definitely pick that up after the sponsor break. But I did want to just piggyback up off what Sean was saying in reference to, like, it's not expensive and different things like that. I used to, of course, when I worked in corporate America, in which a lot of companies do, and that's, again, that's a misinformed thing. A lot of companies don't tell you, but the company that I work for actually would allow their employees to have at least three sessions. It was no charge to them, and then they can do three sessions. Anything after three sessions, they would bill you for that fourth session. And then I worked for another company that allowed you to do four. So there are a lot of different things that people just don't know about. And then I think especially us in the Black community, we're just not taking advantage of those different things that are available. And it didn't specify what kind of therapy. It could have been marriage, or it could have been any kind of therapy that was needed. But those are things I would encourage people to look into at their job, and that they do have things like that that are available outside of the health insurance. They have some offers that are free for you as well.
This is Craig again.
Can I just add one thing? I'm sorry, this is Chevron, man. It's to me, also, the big stigma in the community is that we're really not educated. We really don't even know, like, what are all the different symptoms of mental illness and the different types of mental illness. I was looking it up just to be familiar with it, because I'm not even familiar with it. I'm not educated on mental illness and mental health issues. But just looking at the different types there are, I think like 30 different types of mental illness. You can have something as simple as anxiety, like you don't even trust people. That's a form of a mental illness. And I think we're just not educated what is. So unless you're like crazy, jumping off the bridge or something like that, we don't think that you have a mental illness, which is not true. So I think it's just the education part of it.
Well, I totally agree, but we are about to have our sponsor break this evening. We are featuring CEO and founder of Goof Camp, comedian Juwan Camp. Juwan, are you on?
Yes, ma'am. Hey, how's everybody doing?
Great. We are excited to have you on this evening.
That's good. I've been listening in, and I definitely enjoyed the topic of mental health, because dealing with comedy, that's a big thing that's actually going on right now. A lot of comedians, we go on stage, that's our therapy. And we talk about our life, and a lot of people think it's, you know, jokes, but that's the best part, that you're able to turn the pain into laughter. So when people are able to come out to shows just for that 5 minutes or 30 minutes, we're able to actually take their mind away of what they're going through, and allowing them to laugh for a moment. So I definitely think that this comedy and mental health definitely corresponds with each other. So that was definitely cool. Just to tell a little bit about myself, I am the CEO and founder of Goof Camp, which stands for Giving Others Opportunities First. Pretty much it's a brotherhood that I created. Started out in Greensboro, North Carolina. I felt like that there wasn't any opportunities, you know, for my voice to be heard. So I created essentially my own comedy scene. So now we've expanded from Greensboro to Charlotte, now taking it on to the West Coast, where I'm building a team in Oklahoma City, Lake Charles, Louisiana, and Houston, Texas. So definitely be looking out for us. If you need us to come to your weddings, we do them all, weddings, funerals. You know, some people, you know, want to laugh instead of crying, receptions, any event. Definitely follow us on Goof Camp and on Instagram. That's G-O-O-F Camp. And you can also follow myself, Juwan Camp Comedy, J-I-W-A-N-K-A-P-P Comedy. And I just had a question real quick. Do anybody go out to any local comedy shows who's online right now?
My name is Kenyatta. Yeah, I do. Out in Columbia, I go out to the local ones a good bit. Because we have a Wildin' Out Wednesday type thing here.
That's
really, really amazing.
Yeah. Which I love what they're doing out there. But, yeah, we, you know, the comedy scene, some of them, we definitely need y'all support, because a lot of them are typically free shows. So definitely come out, take your mind with whatever's going on, and get some laughter in your life. Definitely. I can say for myself, you know, just looking for myself on the outside, everything looks good. But it was a time, I could say, in 2017 where depression really hit me bad. And I like to call 2017 a year of rapid growth. So I could definitely say I was taking advantage of therapists, counseling, as well as using the stage as my therapy. So I definitely want to promote that. It's nothing wrong with actually going out, seeking help, talking to people. Because if you keep everything in your head, you know, that's when you eventually will go crazy. So definitely try to utilize the resources that I have.
Hey, Juwan, this is James. How you doing, my brother? Thank you for coming on, man.
Yes, sir.
A question for you. Now, you started Goof Camp. How long ago did you start?
This year we're celebrating 5 years, our 5 year anniversary.
In our conversations, you said that you were offered, and I don't know if you want to share this, your brand. Someone offered you something for your brand, and you decided to stick to your brand. Why did you do that?
I was offered a deal to purchase my brand, but the way the deal was going to come out, they was going to purchase my brand, but I wasn't going to be able to be a part of my brand, and my team wasn't going to be able to be a part of the brand. So essentially, I could have took the money and been selfish, but just to see exactly what my brand is worth, I know that I can get double of that. And I knew, I know my worth, and I know the work that I put through just to put on some of these shows, because a lot of these shows are self-financed, so I was using my money for every show, using my paychecks when I was working a 9-to-5 and put my whole paycheck into a show, because that's how much I believe in the brand. So when I did get the offer, I came back from LA to Charlotte with probably like $16 in my bank account, and I wanted that money, but it's the principle of everything, and you know, I always say don't rush the process. When it's your time, your time will come.
Okay, and with that, another question: how old are you?
28.
At 23 years old, you were offered a significant amount of money for a brand that you didn't even know was going to take off like it did, but you stood your ground. And I wanted to tell you that's admirable, because most of us would have took the money and ran, and we'd be broke at 28.
Right. Absolutely.
Then you'd be sitting on the couch looking at your brand do good on TV. Like, yo, I created that.
Amazing.
And so what has been your greatest challenge as an entrepreneur?
You said the greatest challenge?
Yes.
The greatest challenge, I would say, staying motivated, especially in days that it doesn't look like anything is going to happen. Just keeping a positive attitude. Right, because I've had a lot of no's, a lot of no's, and I use that for motivation, and essentially, you know, I know those no's people are going to regret when they see in the long run, because it has happened now. I actually have a member, part of Goof Camp, who now is, he was featured on the new Def Jam comedy 2 years ago, and he's actually going to be on this season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he's straight out of Concord, North Carolina, now living in Beverly Hills. And just the name of Goof Camp, giving us opportunities first, I stand by that. So I try to give an opportunity to each comedian and give that platform for them to be able to share their talent on stage. Another challenge I would say, though, is the people in this business are very shady. So you definitely got to watch out, because that can mess with your mental. Yeah, you're trying to figure out, you know, why are they exactly like this? And a lot of people are characters. I will say that. Definitely shout out to all the characters out there. But, yeah, man, I would say that's
now,
my challenge.
The last question I have for you, and then I'll let you tell everybody how they can see you in your next upcoming show. If I'm a young comedian and I want to get started, what are some of the steps you would tell that youngster like yourself? And what they need to do to get started, and how do they get in touch with Goof Camp?
To get started, I would say go to your local open mic. And pretty much I tell every comic, you know, when you're on that stage, that's your time. So no matter if they laugh or not, you know, that's your stage time. So don't get discouraged if a joke don't go over well, because it takes years. I've been doing it for 9 years now, and I'm just now finding my voice where I feel like I'm funny. So it definitely takes time. Don't rush the process. But in your city, look up open mics. That's how I started out. The Greensboro Comedy Zone open mic. And essentially, I started my own open mic, which I have in Greensboro at the Artist Block. And you can reach out if anybody's interested in ever hitting the stage, because I always open my stage up to anybody who wants to try. You can reach out to me at Juwan Cap on Facebook, as well as capnetworks@gmail.com. So, yeah, definitely reach out because I'm looking to put on more talent.
All right, and the last question to my last question. Now, how did you get the name of your current tour? Because I don't think you mentioned that.
What, Cap Networks?
No, your current tour that you're on, about your hairline.
Oh, the Have You Seen My Hairline tour. The Have You Seen My Hairline tour, I started that because my hairline is essentially on life support. So I started that tour as an independent tour. A self-financed tour as well, because I knew nobody wasn't going to wait on me or give me that opportunity. So I wasn't trying to wait on anybody. So essentially, I hit up promoters in every city, hit up comics, because really, comics book comics, and I created my own run. And I've started it at the end of 2017 when I lost my job, and I've been going on with it now. And with me having a baby girl on the way, I got a new tour. We actually kicked it off at the beginning of the year called I Got a Baby, I Need Some Money Tour, alongside my Goof Camp brother, Christian Johnson. So you can definitely check us out in a city near you on that tour as well.
That's awesome. And again, I'm going to turn it back over to Tasha and Kenyatta. But before we go, could you tell everybody one more time how they could get in contact with you in your next upcoming show?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you can reach me at email, capnetworks@gmail.com, as well as on social media, Juwan Cap, JIWANKAPP. And my next show is, actually I'm doing a pop-up show at the Idiot Box, a self-produced Goof Camp show, March 24th at the Idiot Box Comedy Club. The only urban show that happens at the Idiot Box Comedy Club is put on by me, and I'm bringing local talent.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, man. God bless you, man. Continued success. And Tasha, Kenyatta, the floor is yours.
Hey, Juwan, we want to thank you again for coming on. I'm gonna come on and do open mic.
Come on now.
No, sir. I will laugh all day long, but I am not a comedian. No, sir. But we greatly appreciate you coming on, sharing the information. And like you said, laughter is good for the soul, so it definitely plays a part in what we're talking about as far as with the mental health. But I think my co-host, I think my co-host Kenyatta had a question like before the break. She had a question that she wanted to open up to the group.
Yes, I did, and that was kind of what James and Jeanette had kind of started talking about a little bit before we went to the concert break. But, of course, the question again was, why do the Black community feel like church is a replacement for therapy? Of course, I'm definitely a Christian. I believe in, talking with the pastor and all of those different things. But I feel like there is a time and a place for everything. And so I feel that for me, that's not the proper place is where I want to address that. So I wanted to open the floor up for everybody else to kind of, I guess, figure out why do we always run to the church more so than doing anything else.
We all wanted to talk about this one. All right, go ahead, friend.
All right, this is Tamara. I think it's done that way because people probably feel like that's their safe place. You're talking to a pastor, you're in your, especially if it's your church home, that you're in your church home, so you feel like you're in a safe place. But that's why I think that, some people do run to the church because they feel like, it's covered by God, like I said, the pastor's there, so it just feels like a safe place. I'm done.
I agree with T. This is Jazz, also from JT Ladies Lounge. I agree with what she said, and I also feel like sometimes you just, or, you know, an older person, you just need a little more Jesus in your life. So you go and, you know, you pray, or the pastor's preaching a sermon that's relevant to what you're going through at the time. So you feel like, I do need more Jesus, and he's talking directly to me, and, you know, maybe I can just, you know, lay it all down here, because for you it is a safe space, and it's also kind of like giving you a different spin, a religious outlook on whatever situation you're going through. Because I know, you know, experiencing it, like I said, you know, when I wanted to reach out for help and I didn't, I did go to church more often, and it did help me put a more positive perspective on what I was dealing with. But I also knew that I needed more tools in addition to, you know, the word, in addition to what the pastor was telling me, not to discredit the church, but I needed more. So that's why I think a lot of us run to the church, because we figure if we sprinkle a little bit more Jesus on top, it'll be better. That's it.
Hey guys. For me, y'all. Yeah, you can get.
Hey, guys. Hey, this is Kim, Queen of the Queen City. I'm sorry, I got in late, and I was actually listening to Tasha on her interview, but and lost track of time. But I've been listening in, and I'm loving this topic, and I just wanted to put my two cents in. Hopefully I'm not repeating what somebody said. But I love the question that Kenyatta asked about why do we, you know, the church, you know, go to the church. And I think, for me, I've done it before, especially like when I was married. And then one of the things we got to remember is that a lot of pastors are licensed counselors or therapists. So they are professionally capable of helping those of us who may have some challenges mentally. So it may not be a total replacement for getting that help mentally, but it can be a start. And sometimes the pastor can refer you to another therapist who can help you with any specific issues. And I remember I was hearing the young brother say, the comedian, talking about depression. I think that's a very big deal in our community. It could be situational, or like my mother suffered with depression her whole life, and it's very debilitating seeing people go through that. And I know a lot of times we hear about, oh, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and you just got to think positive and stuff. But depression and mental illness can have some chemical imbalances along with it. I've suffered from it. I've taken medications from it. Unfortunately, with the stigma that goes with it, a lot of people don't get help. So I just wanted to put that little two cent in. I know in our community we do struggle with that, but it's something that's very real, in that I think once we just realize that it's not always, you know, your fault personally, that is something real, could be a chemical imbalance, and getting the help that we need, that we can really go a long way in helping to solve the problem. And then not stigmatizing people as weak, which is what we a lot of times do because they have a mental illness. I think we could go a long way in helping to solve that problem.
All right. For me, I look at the church, it's associated with trust. And I think that's a place where we can trust. But I've also found, having been, you know, an elder in the church and being a minister, that a lot of people also don't trust the church, because they're going to hear their issues buzzed around the church. And I think the higher your so-called Christian barometer, the less likely you are to seek even counseling in the church, because you don't want to be the one that people are talking about around the church. So that's another reason why we, you know, the church has changed. You know, we used to have the church do the marches for equality and everything else, and right now we don't hear from prominent pastors fighting causes. So right now it's just a trust issue in our community. You know, when it comes to us selling life insurance, or any service that we're giving to our community, we lack trust.
That's a whole other issue right there. That's opening up a whole other can of worms, y'all. I was trying to reel James back in, because we had a very long conversation about something about this earlier today. However, mental illness in our community is very much so complicated. There's many, many, many layers to it. And once again, I just pray and hope that we do seek help and not be afraid to, you know, to speak to people and to go outside our own four walls and let people know what we're going through.
I think Doc May or James made a really good point about the trust issue, too. This is the queen again. I felt comfortable going to my pastor because that relationship was there. You know, going to a brand new mental health professional that you don't really know, that doesn't know you, and there's a level of comfort there, too. So I think that's a very good point that James made about the trust and the comfort level going to your pastor, because there is some relationship and some familiar, you're familiar with that person. So that can have a big impact on people choosing to go to the pastor.
Exactly. I totally agree with you guys. Everybody has some really good points. But I wanted to kind of maneuver to another question. This will be our last question for the night. Do you guys think that Black mental health is the same or viewed the same as white mental health?
This is Jasmine from JT Ladies Lounge. No, I don't. I don't think it's viewed the same. And at some point, I kind of don't feel that the same opportunities to take advantage of it is offered to us. You know, I don't know why I feel that way, but I think it's because, I don't know, maybe it's because it was accepted earlier in their culture, you know, on how to deal with things, you know, sending their kids to therapists and all that. It was accepted earlier. And for us, because we didn't have that opportunity or we wouldn't afford the opportunity earlier in our lives, that now it's like we're trying, you know, we're moving more towards accepting it in our own community, but it's still something that we still do just handle a lot of things on our own based on, you know, our history. So I don't think it's the same. I don't think we, you know, it's offered to us on the same level, again, because of us not being able to afford it, you know, health care and poverty issues. And if we can't afford it, do we have time to take off work to actually go see it? Because, hey, we still got to take the kids to appointments and whatnot. So, no, I don't. That's just my opinion.
This is
I agree with you.
Great.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is Samantha from JT Ladies Lounge, and I don't think it's viewed the same. And maybe certain situations may. I mean, you know, I'm not out there doing statistics and all that stuff like that. So, you know, just going off of my opinion and thoughts, you know, some situations, yes, it can be viewed the same, but over, you know, that's a real low for me. But it's seen every day on the news. You know, you see it. You know, people in your family. Here it is. You have, you know, somebody, you know, Black that do the same thing that somebody white does. It's like, oh, the Black person is the thug, you know, he was the criminal, but then you have the white person, oh, he's the one with the mental issues. You know what I'm saying? Then they want to go back into, you know, you go back into records and all that and saying, well, he had this issue when he was in the fifth grade, but then when you go back to the Black person that did it, yeah, he could have had the same issues in the fifth grade, but now they're going back to say his issue was, you know, again, something he did pertaining to a crime. You know, his parents was on drugs. He wasn't raised in a home. You know, he was raised in a single home. White person could be raised the same way, single home, but the outcome is totally different. So, like I said, for the most part, to me, I don't think it's viewed the same, and we see it every day. So without even doing statistics, it's right there in our face.
I think that's some good, you ladies are making some really great points. But I guess it made me think of another question, because we talk about the stigma, you know, the stigma attached to it, especially in the Black community. Could Johnny Mama have ignored it when he was in fifth grade, because of the stigma attached to it, and then when he gets to be an adult, now the issue is coming out, whereas, you know, Johnny's mama or, you know, Miss Sally or Miss Betsy took him right away, and the affordability issue is definitely there, took him to a therapist right away, when he was 5 years old when there were some issues. I know that's a big struggle in the Black community. For me, my daughter had problems with ADD and some issues, and thankfully I had a good job where I could go get her therapy right away. But it was so much pushback from my family and even from the therapeutic community or even the schools trying to get my daughter some help. So sometimes it could just be an issue of it being, do we go get the help we need for our kids at an early age? And then it comes out
right,
later
right.
on. You know,
right, I agree.
I'm just putting the question out there.
I agree.
You know what,
so just to wrap it all up with our last question really quickly so we can finish this thing out, is how do we educate our community on their health? And, of course, Jeanette kind of talked about that earlier in the show about, you know, we just got comfortable with having a primary doctor, but how do we start focusing on our mental health? And I told Tasha, me and Tasha had a conversation that it looks different for everybody. I'm that person, of course, I've struggled with depression that I can easily, I'm going to shower every day. I'm going to still make sure I'm eating. I'm going to make sure I don't keep on the same clothes. I'm going to get out of bed, but I still have this dark space in me. So how do we get to a place that we educate our community on their health?
You know what, Tasha, this is Tamara, and I'm going to say this real quick, and I'm going to move on to that question. But I want to go back to when we, you know, most of us are just saying about seeking help. We don't want to seek help. But, you know, sometimes that mental health issue can even start when, could be an issue when someone is telling us we need help and we like, no, we good. And it can start from in grammar school or in high school because we have schools now that let parents know, you know, this is going on with school. You know, your child this, your child that. And sometimes as parents, we like, no, they just picking with my child. You know what I'm saying? Oh, ain't nothing wrong. Ain't nothing wrong with my child. He'll grow out of it. And I say that to say because my son, he had his IEP classes for since like second grade up into fifth grade. And his problem was stuttering. Even though, you know, that was something that he had to work with and get it done, it was one of those, okay, I didn't take offense of it. I didn't take that my child was slow. He had mental issues. It's just that, you know, he was delayed as far as with his speech. But I say that to say sometimes it even starts in school or where somebody says, your child may need help. Your child may need to be seen. And we as parents sometimes take that as criticism, like, what, ain't nothing wrong with my child. Ain't nothing wrong with me.
Right.
So I just wanted to throw that out there, too.
Right. So, yeah, so then the question poses is how do we get our community comfortable with it?
Get our community comfortable with it. I think as adults, if we see someone having an issue or, you know, talk to them, ask them, well, have you seek help? Come with, you know, invite them to places. Invite them to say, hey, I heard this. They're having this, you know, this meeting or this event or this conference. Won't you come with me? You know, let's see what they're talking about. We can also offer the help so it don't seem like we're coming off judgmental towards that person also.
And this is Precious, and I wanted to add that what I would suggest is that more people be honest about their reality and their stories because I think that is how we really help each other by owning our truth, standing up in it, and sharing, because you'll find that it's nothing wrong that a lot of us deal with a lot of the same things, and we can get help from each other in order for us to get through whatever it is that you went through. And so we got to remove this shame and get in our lane so that we can be a better assistance to one another.
And, hey, this is Jasmine. I was just thinking the same thing, just talking about it more. Talking about it more and talking about our truths more, whether we sought help, we're about to seek help, regardless. Just, you know, make it more known that this is something that we have to do in order to heal our community, in order to heal ourselves, and that it's okay to actually reach out to someone that's not in your family or someone that's not, quote-unquote, close to you because, like, you just never know how someone may react or, you know, how your story may impact someone to see themselves in your story and go seek help. So I think, you know, just keeping the conversation going and letting us know that it's okay to seek help. We still love you and we don't think any less of you as a person.
Right. I agree. I think this is Kenya.
Sorry, just really quick. I was going to say just supporting them, I think, too, because, of course, since we have that stigmatism in the Black community and, you know, people look at you kind of side-eyed and think that something's wrong with you, just being more supportive and just being open and not being, you know, in that judgment zone, of course, is easier said than done. But I think that's another big thing that our community could work on a little bit more to get us in that comfortable space.
I definitely agree with you, Kiana. This is Tasha. And before I want to close out with this last thing. We come to the end of our segment. And what I want to do is that we have to learn to break generational curses. And like so many of you guys have said before, it's generational. Our grandparents and their parents' parents never talked about mental health. And so today is one of those, today is the day that we decide to break the cycle. We're talking about it on air. We're talking about it with everyone. And we are breaking the cycle today. So again, I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. Talk about mental health in the Black community. And we want you guys to go out and continue to spread the word and let everybody know it's okay. You can get help and we still love you. You guys have a great night. This is Tasha Jordan and Kenyatta Moore with Family Circle. And you guys have a great night.